Hello, everybody. May 12th, 2021 for AAPC Social Hour. I'm going to share this in our group. So if you are there, hang tight. We have Jill Young with us, and we will get to know Jill in just a minute. All right. Hey, give us a shout out and let us know where you're at, where you're watching from. And let's see here. Okay, we've got Veena Patel from New Jersey. Hello, Veena. And we've got Emmy Nick from Maryland, that same area. And then we've got the Midwest represented, Terry Boat from Indiana. Thanks for joining us, Terry. We've got Jill Young with us today as everybody starts to trickle in. Jill, you've been around the APC world for a long time.
Oh, thanks so much.
For someone so young.
I refer to it as coder years. You know, you have dog years. So I would say I've been 10 coder years. So then you say, okay, how many years does it take to be a good coder? And then you do the math and go, wow, she's been around a long time. But 10 years sounds so much better than the other decades.
Well, here's what I learned about you from HealthCon last time, because we've talked at several health cons over the years, and I learned recently that you were the brains behind the board of directors, the AAPCCA Hardship Scholarship Fund. Is that true?
Technically, yes, but it was a group effort, that's something I tried to keep quiet for a long time, because it really was the whole board that, granted, yes, it was my idea, but the whole board that got behind it and worked out the details. And we're standing in the hallways in Jacksonville with trash buckets, getting nickels and dimes and change and stuff, raising the amount of money that we did. But yeah, but I don't think it should have my name on it. I really think it should have that 2010 class of the BOD that really did it all to me.
Well, 11 years later, the Hardship Fund still helps APC members. And there are all kinds of different situations that lead members to request that help. We've seen natural disasters. We've seen those who've just struggled with hard times. But what a great thing. So thank you for spearheading that effort.
All those that have donated to it, all those that have been a part of it, I am astounded at how it's developed into a process. And, you know, again, to the people at work, to the quilts maker, I mean, all of the people that work on it, it is just astounding to watch what it does. And having been on the committee that does selection in the past, to read those applications is hard. It's really hard. So it's wonderful that we have that ability, and it's wonderful that the AAPC so frequently supports us with matching dollars when we have challenges. I remember one year I challenged that the NAB to out donate the BOD, and sorry, but Mike Mesko lost that bet. So, but it's all in good fun, and it's all for the members. So that's the best part. So thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, everybody who's watching, we have Jill on, and we're going to talk about coding for COVID and her whole experience with that. And I'm excited to hear about that, Jill, because our world has changed, and it's a lot that has been happening. And I see updates all the time about coding for COVID, a lot of things changing. But before we get into that, we're going to let our publishing team in and hear what's going on in the publishing world. So let me see who we have here. We've got Lee and Renee. All right, Renee Dustman, Lee Fifield. Lee, you are on mute and we need to see your video.
Here I come. There I am.
There you are. Awesome. How are you two today?
Great. How's everybody there?
Oh, we're great. Just good. Connecting with all the members, everybody's jumping in, and we want to hear what's happening in the world of Healthcare Business Monthly, our member magazine.
Well, I'll go first, and hopefully my sound works, but if it doesn't, Lee, kick me off and take over, okay? So yeah, for the June issue of Healthcare Business Monthly, we're doing our annual HealthCon wrap up. HealthCon was in March in Dallas, and it was a hybrid event. We're going to be doing going forward with multimedia in the digital version of the magazine. So even if you only get the print magazine, you can go into your MyAAPC account and see the digital magazine and check out the new feature. This for the wrap-up issue, we included a couple snippets of actual sessions from HealthCon. So there's one from AAPC CEO is Bevan Erickson during his Welcome to HealthCon speech. And also Senior VP of Products, Ray Marie Jimenez, session on evaluation and management Q&A.
Renee, so members get a clear vision of this. This is super cool, I think. So you have the hard copy magazine and there'll be an ad there. But if you go to the visual or the digital copy online at aapc.com and some of the ads, there will be a little video in those spots where you could click and see.
Well, for this one, they're just static pictures in the print. Okay. So you'll see like a picture of Bevan and there's a picture of Ray and it just looks like pictures in print. But when you go to the digital magazine, you'll see where you can click and an actual video will play.
Okay. That's
and neat. Then going forward, we are looking to adding more things like digital ads and stuff like that.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm excited to check that out.
Yeah. Yes, it's really, it's cool, especially if you weren't able to go to HealthCon, to be able to see, you know, little clips that actually, you know, things that went on, it's a lot of fun. So then we'll also be, also in June, we have an actual kind of wrap-up article of a session that was at HealthCon, on risk adjustment, and we're continuing Ray's new column, E&M Q&A column, where she answers questions that were about the new EM guidelines that were asked at HealthCon. So you got so many that it just turned out to be something where we were able to make a new column for probably a year.
Or two or three, and then we'll have the new codes for hospital and there we'll start all over again.
Right. And there's also articles on coding sepsis and inpatient queries from Nancy Reading and how to set up your home office ergonomically so that you don't end up with health issues of your own. Lots of good stuff in there. And
I remember an article again, like a few years back, Renee, that was a coding for or yoga for coders. And that kind of fits into that whole ergonomic discussion, how to stay healthy and mentally sharp while you're sitting at your desk all day long.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm excited.
It's a different world, you know, with so many of us still working at home. Yeah. Yeah. I was saying it's a different world with so many of us working from home, you know, something that we never really thought about before. And now we have to kind of police our own workstations. So it's a good article.
All right. Lee, how about on your end?
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, throw out the monthly plug for writing for the magazine. We want as many members contributing as possible. We need your expertise in your areas, whether it be a general article or something very specific. We're always looking for anything that's a, you know, kind of a hot topic out there right now that people are talking about. And if it's something that falls within your field, then we absolutely encourage you to send in an article. If you've written for us before or never at all, you know, give it a shot. It's a good way to earn CEUs and if you're nervous about your level of writing prowess, you know, don't be too concerned. We're looking more for your expertise. And we can, you know, in the editing process, we can help you polish up anything you send in. Just one thing to keep in mind, we do work 2 months ahead. So if you're looking to write something timely and you're wondering if it's the right time or too late, you can always throw us an email. All of our emails are at the beginning of the magazine. Or if you have a topic to suggest, or if you're wondering if you should write on a certain topic, reach out to us whenever. We can help you with that.
And I can speak for the editing help. I write the way I talk. I have diarrhea of the pen. And you guys, whenever I've written, and I haven't written in a while, I know, but whenever I've written, you guys do a great job editing. So don't be afraid that, you know, it's not going to look right. They do a great job at turning things around and you go, wow, did I say that? That's pretty good. So kudos to the editing staff and thank you also.
All right. Thank you, Jill. Like she said, don't worry about the writing as much as the content. The content is what we need from you. And you can go to the website, aapc.com, go to magazine under the resources section, and that's where you can contribute an article online. It also gives you some parameters for, you know, requirements and so forth. It's all right there if you want to read about it a little bit more.
All right. Well, Renee, Lee, it's so good to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us. And we will see you next month.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Great.
Thanks so much.
Okay. We'll see you.
Thanks, ladies. Everyone. Nice talking to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Jill, we spoke a little bit about yourself, about you, as we launched our broadcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do, maybe a little bit about how you became a coder, and then we'll go into coding for COVID.
Well, the thing that I always try to do is to give a shout out to people that have had a major effect in my life. And a young lady by the name of Lou Ann Jenkins, who was my corporate trainer back in 1998, organized a bunch of us at the billing company we were working at to take the CPC exam. Didn't even know it existed. And there were 8 of us that took the exam and 7 of us passed with her help. And so that was the beginning of an interesting adventure. I've managed to be in the right place at the right time a couple of times, but I have always loved numbers. My dad was a numbers person. And so I adore ICD-10. And I don't know, you know, if I was an engineer, I'd have a pocket protector. I'm not sure what I should wear to show I'm an ICD-10 geek, but I love ICD-10 and the number structure. It's just lovely. And I use it all the time in my consulting business. I do lots of educational talks for local chapters, talks nationally, talks locally. I love what I do. Not right now because everything's virtual. I don't get to touch people. I don't usually get to see their reactions much anymore. So I'm looking forward to a time when we can be together again, so to speak. As Marty said last night on the call, you know, we just miss each other so much. So it'll be fun. So I'm looking forward to DC next year. And hopefully by then we can all give each other a bunch of hugs.
Now you're a consultant. Is that right? You're not a production coder.
Nope. I admire people that are. I don't have the attention span to do that, apparently. I admire people that sit and code all day. That is not my forte. By the same token, it doesn't take my love of coding any less. It just takes it at a different level. So I get hired to do a lot of different things, but at the end of the day, it almost always comes down to education at some level. And so that's where I'm very, very lucky for the job that I have because I just adore it.
And we spoke the other day about you always finding yourself in the mix of emerging issues on the business side of healthcare. We spoke about ICD-10 and telehealth, and I'd like to come back to how you do that. But right now, I'd love to hear about how did you find yourself in the thick of coding for COVID?
Every year going into the new year, once we get past all the CPT and ICD changes, I always try to come up with a new lecture to have in my back pocket. so that if I get a call for something, I've got something that I enjoy doing. And I created a lecture and it was on a topic that mainstream coders don't usually work with, thought it would be interesting, gave it a couple times. It wasn't very interesting and decided, nah, that was a loss, but I had fun doing the research. And then COVID hit. That lecture was on telemedicine. And so I became an instant expert on telemedicine. As I said, most of us don't work with telemedicine because it was something that was only at HIPAA shortage areas and other, you know, federally qualified healthcare centers and things that we don't do mainstream. And so for a period of time, I just researched the heck out of stuff and gave tons of teleconferences. And it was more that I wanted to get the word out because I knew how much everyone was struggling with it, as daily the government released information and daily I had to change that lecture. And so it just evolved into that, the interim final rules that they published out. I indexed them because I got so, I realized if you highlight a 237 page document, you can't find anything. So you better index it so that when someone asks where the reference is, I could say page 27. But that background in telemedicine, knowing how it had been done, was so instrumental in bringing it forward. And I think that's what makes me as successful as I am, as I do the research and I understand it from a different level and that allows me to explain it better. Because, you know, sometimes people have to hear things three or four times from a couple different directions in order to understand it. And I think being an expert at COVID and the whole healthcare issue around it came from that and came from the fact that I've worked in doctor's offices front to back. And so, you know, I know all the jobs, so to speak, to know what effect it might have. And even now, I mean, I'm volunteering at the local Sears where the hospital is doing vaccinations. And that's giving me invaluable knowledge that I will use about what's it going to be like when an office tries to take vaccines in as the federal government is trying to get them. That's what their long-term project is to get offices to do vaccines. And so that knowledge is going to be helpful. So I've just been lucky. And as we always say, you never know what you do and how it's going to affect your life or other people's lives. For me, COVID was just a timing thing. It was truly a timing thing, but I always try to find topics that nobody's talking about. I try to be unique. Anybody that knows me knows I'm relatively unique in a good way most of the time. But finding topics that nobody else is talking about to make it interesting. So long answer to a short question.
Oh, that's right. Well, there are a lot of topics even under the COVID umbrella, and you'll be speaking about those in our workshop that you're presenting on May 25th. That's called Coding and Billing for Services During the COVID-19 Public Health Emergency Era. And I am going through the AAPC Knowledge Center and just looking at some of the headlines of different stories we've written about COVID. Most recently, new codes, rates for COVID-19 therapeutics, coverage of non-prescription COVID tests, FDA authorizes non-prescription COVID tests. What are the common issues that you're seeing at facilities and with healthcare providers regarding COVID?
You know, it's on so many levels. So most recently, I had a friend that was diagnosed with COVID, got over it and wanted to go in to see his doctor. But his doctor had an office policy that said you had to have a negative COVID test to come into the office. And that policy made sense months ago. But now when we know that some people are going to test positive that are no longer ill for months, and we don't know if they're carriers, we don't think that they are, but that policy is in place. So this man who's healthy can't go to see his doctor. So we have to have an evolution of policies and someone staying on top of, you know, that kind of research. What made sense 6 months or a year ago may not make sense. As we look at the fact that the vaccine just got approved for children down to 12, PEDS offices, get ready. You know, you're going to get the calls because they're not going to want their, you know, little Tommy to be in with a bunch of adults getting shots. And are we going to be able to handle that? Is a PEDS office going to be able to handle shots in the offices? And what are the challenges that they're going to face just physically, let alone with the billing piece of it? So they have those challenges. And the challenges that that we have just philosophically with who's getting vaccinated and who's not getting vaccinated, and you know, what does that mean in the workplace? So keeping track of different payers' policies as we look at the public health emergency, and we know what Medicare and CMS is, they announce everything and what they're doing, but what about Blue Cross Blue Shield of your state or of my state or Aetna and Cigna and United Health? What are they doing with a lot of these telehealth visits and all of that product of codes that came out? One of the things that I noticed as I was preparing that telehealth talk a year and a half ago was the fact that many of these insurance companies were getting ready to roll out their own in-house kind of a telehealth product where you could call the nurse or call the PA or NP, and they put those on hold. They're trying to roll those back out. And what does that mean to your practice? You don't want to be providing services for free, but certainly if you want, you know, grandma that lives 50 miles away and is not in good health to be able to have that telemedicine visit, can you still do that? And so, you know, here's a free tip. You're going to have to make a grid of your insurances in order to keep track of stuff. And those are some of the challenges just off the top of my head.
When we spoke the other day, you mentioned the challenges of providers communicating the importance of being vaccinated. How do you see us overcoming those sorts of challenges with the public?
If it's at all possible, it's one-on-one now. I think that the Johnson & Johnson's pause that was put on that took a whole group of people that were in the middle with a maybe and pushed them down to a no. They need their questions answered. They need to have a confidence in getting a shot. And usually that confidence lasts as long as you've got their attention. And so there are certainly drives and scenarios that I have been hearing about where it can be a Q&A at a location and then shots are available. So it's like, not that we talked you into it, but rather we talked you out of your fears. Let's go ahead and do the vaccination. For some of the people that are anti-vaxxers, my daughter lives in Montana. Where she lives, the vaccination rate is horrendous. I don't know what we're going to do because that allows the variants to propagate, you know, and that creates, that now means maybe my vaccine won't be effective. And there are certainly cultural differences. There's economic differences. And we just have to find a better way to get to people, to talk to them one-on-one and allay their fears. That's the best we can do. I know our hospital system here is, I think they're vaccinated at the hospital level at about 60%. I was talking to someone that's in a hospital in the Detroit area. They're at about 60%. That's in the hospital. Those are people that work in healthcare. They're only at 60%. And so we just have to get to them with knowledge and understanding. And as I read somewhere, and I wish I could remember it, if you're believing Facebook and Twitter instead of the CDC and Dr. Fauci, what does that say about where your knowledge base comes from? You know, for those of us, I was a science major. I'm on this side of it, but you know, you have to have your fears allayed no matter what, because you're not going to allow them to give you a shot until you are. And so I think it's going to be one-on-one and having people understand exactly what it is. And it's an unselfish thing. And I think that's something that we have people that aren't prepared and don't realize that, you know, to say to someone that's 20 years old, the vaccine may help you not to be as sick, but the vaccine is going to save my life if you get the vaccine as the young person. And that's a message that's gotten a little bit lost. So we're working on it as best we can. But yeah, that's what it comes down to, is that challenge.
Now your workshop on May 25th, it's not just on COVID, but it's talking about all of the different aspects within healthcare through this COVID era. What changes do you think we'll see that will stick after the pandemic is taken care of?
Well, we've already seen in looking at what Medicare and what the classifications of some of the telehealth codes are going into 2021 and where that will take us going into 2022. I certainly think that from CMS and Medicare's perspective, they have realized that having healthcare available at a much greater safety level for some of our senior patients is a very good advantage. It's a very good thing. So I think as far as Medicare is concerned, we're going to see telehealth come down. And when I say Medicare, I'm not talking Medicare Advantage, because the Medicare Advantage plans have their own market that they're dealing with. So just for Medicare, I think on a go forward basis, you know, as long as we're looking at vaccinations, we know that the vaccine right now is being provided free of charge. And so the administration fee is what offices are looking for. And they recently raised that administration fee up to $40 a shot. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good dollar amount for administration of a shot. Now, having worked at that vaccine clinic, I can tell you, if you're thinking about doing vaccines in your office, you need to do some significant research, because it's not just about having a freezer cold enough. There is an entire process. When I work at the vaccination clinic, there's a pharmacist on site that's the one that's reconstituting the Pfizer and coordinating the Moderna and the other vaccines, as far as everything has a timestamp on it and all of that. And you're going to have someone in your office to do that. If you have a lot of shots, like a peds office, we would anticipate that with the lowering of the age to 12, then okay, that would be great. But I think it has to be well thought through, and you need to do the research on that. And amazingly, it's all online. It is out there. The information is out there on CDC website and on the CMS.gov in some instances, depending on what you're talking about. So I think as we go forward into the end of 2021, and my fingers are tremendously crossed that, you know, by the end of summer, we'll be in a better place. And I don't say that just because I'm having a 40th anniversary party, if I'm lucky. That's my goal. If I can get to that, that will be a sign that we've reached the new normal. But, you know, services will be there, but it's going to be on a case-by-case basis from a provider's perspective or a payer's perspective. And so that means those of us that do coding and billing are going to have to continue to do research. And I think that's something that a lot of people are looking for help doing. They're not used to doing research. And that's what we have seen. I have seen in the educational lectures that I did, people asking questions that you just want to go, how do you get information on a daily basis if you don't know the answer to that? And I realized it wasn't just one person. It was a lot of people. And so understanding, and that's one of the things that's in my lectures, a lot of that, where was this research? How do you find it? If you're looking for something about diabetes education, how do you find that kind of stuff? Because I get those phone calls and emails all the time. And I think this pandemic and the whole telemedicine COVID stuff showed me that. And so for me to pass along tips, and I think that's, again, one of the things that I like to do in my lectures, different than maybe some other people do, is I like to not forget some of the minutiae. You know, for example, we had a place of service issue. We were given incorrect information early last year, and then they gave us a fix for it. I still have people that don't know how easy it is to fix those claims. I try to remember to talk about that. I try to give them the little details and not gloss over it. So I think as we look forward, paying attention and learning for you as a coder or a biller that's going to listen to the workshop, I think you're going to get a lot more information than you expected to, but you're also going to get some other kinds of information that may be helpful to you in other projects that you may be working on in your office. And that's as they say, that's just the way I roll.
How are providers, how are they adapting and evolving to telehealth? Because like right now, here we are virtually meeting and having this this discussion, and you have providers who do not want to be virtual people or maybe feel uncomfortable being virtual people. How have they adapted? How do they continue to evolve their practices?
Depends on how old they are, quite honestly. It really does. I think when Medicare made available telephone calls only, that was a huge deal, because it's much easier for doctors sitting in their offices. And there's a lot of doctors' offices where there is more than one doctor in an office sharing. It's much easier for me to sit here and pick up the phone or have a headset on and talk to a patient and have it be reasonably private than it is to have this screen up and you can see people walking behind me and somebody walks by, hey, how you doing there? You know, there's a lot of security issues that you have to worry about having Zoom. And so there are offices that aren't doing it. There are offices that dedicate a space to it. I want to call it the Zoom room, so that they can be sure that no one's going to be interruptive of the conversation. But I think it just depends on the physician and their comfort zone with Zoom. Alex, I'll bet that your ability to work a Zoom meeting was not where it is now a year ago. I had just started to do it with family. And I found myself in those early days on some of those Zoom meetings, and I've got an IT person on from the company, and I'm telling her, no, you need to go to the upper hand corner and click on, you know, we became the experts because we were the users. Doctors don't have that kind of patience. My husband doesn't have that kind of patience, and we're trying to get him on a family call. So I think it depends on their knowledge level and comfort zone. We also saw a lot of people doing not the right thing. We saw doctors that would say, well, I don't want to go in the room. So nurse, here's a smartphone, go take this in the room with the patient. And I was really pleased that CMS had those open door forums where they had people on the calls that actually, believe it or not, black and white answered questions. And those calls are found on the CMS website, and they are, you can listen to them. Some of them have been transcribed. Black and white answers to questions. And one of the questions they answered was, you know what, if you're not in the room and you're doing it this way, you can say it's because there's not enough, PHE equipment, personal protective equipment, PPE, but here's what it's gonna be like. Or doctors that were billing telehealth when they were in the same hospital building, you know, so they answered questions and corrected things. So it was a learning curve for our doctors. I think the problem is going to be getting that genie back in the bottle. Some of the supervision rules that were changed that we'll talk about during the conference, and they were huge. I'm astounded at the number of rules that had to be rescinded in order to, in essence, allow any provider that could to take care of patients. Getting that genie back in the bottle is going to be a tough one. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a tough one. So we'll see, you know, and those are the kinds of things we'll talk about.
Yeah. If you're watching this broadcast, APC members, and you work in a provider's office, I'd love to hear your comments and share your comments about what is that like? How is your office evolving and handling the evolution of telehealth and embracing the virtual world? Now, Jill, could the evolution of telehealth benefit practices? Could they care for more patients, help more people?
Not necessarily. I think that, you know, you find that a telehealth visit takes just as much time. I've worked with offices that I'm like, okay, doc, you're the most expensive person in the office from an hourly wage perspective. Why are you dialing the phone? You know, let's have someone that makes less than you do that for you, plus make your productivity better. So there have been some scenarios where they're just not efficient at it, and then they feel that inefficiency, but don't have, someone that does a good job at streamlining the process. Other offices just jumped right in, 2 feet, no problem, doing a good job. So again, depends on the age and the qualifications and the skills in the office. And I think that's why, again, as I say, you just throw a ton of tips out there and you're going to take whatever tip works for you in your office. And if you get, you know, they always say, if you get 2 things out of a 1 hour talk, you're doing great. And so that means with the talk I'm giving, you better get more than 2 or I haven't done my job.
Yeah. We have Tammy Trower. She says, I need help and guidance with coding. Hey, Tammy, I recommend you jump into the AAPC Facebook group and ask specific questions on where you're stuck there. And there are thousands of veteran coders in there who'd be happy to help you out. Jill, while I was reading some of the outline of your presentation, and I'm going to put a link to that workshop that's coming up into the comments, so anybody who's interested could find that. And there it is. Would you give us an overview? I guess, who's this geared towards? What kind of information will you be sharing?
Well, I mean, in a general sense, when I was asked to do it, I was like, my mind just exploded all at once. And I thought about the different focuses of talks that I've done on the topic. And I thought, that is what it is. It's like, okay, let's go back to, let's see, it was mid-March and I was supposed to go to New Orleans, which if anyone remembers last year, mid-March, there was a bit of a problem in New Orleans where things blew up. And so, you know, taking it forward and looking at what happened last year. And as I've mentioned, you know, are there corrective actions that we can take for errors that we made through no fault of our own? And as we went forward, what opened up? What challenges did we face? What did we learn? What did we find out? What did CMS change their policies about? What did other insurance change their policies about? And we'll take it, you know, all the way through the process to the point where we are now, which is looking at doing vaccines in the office, looking at when will the PHE, public health emergency, end? And what does that mean when it's going to end? What does that mean to you in your office? You know, we have issues like the sequestration being delayed. We have other qualified payment models that are being adjusted. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's been going on that we're going to have to kind of get back up to speed. And it's been my experience that for the most part, doctors, staffs are back in the office, not 100%, but more so than anywhere else. And that's because they see patients. And so having that, you know, start to finish of the last year and a half, if you will, overview of what this pandemic has done in our offices is what my goal is, so that you'll have stuff reiterated and reinforced knowledge that you already have, but also going through stuff to make sure you didn't miss anything. I get people asking with questions about rejections, and it's like, just show me the rejection. And most of the time it takes me at least a minute to figure it out because they're so common in the mistakes, but that's because I'm doing this all the time. And so there's, you know, people still out there struggling with some accounts receivable money that they've not collected. And then, as I said before about the vaccine and looking at pushing it out to the offices and going out, going forward with that, is that something that you want to do? So we're really looking toward the future of where we'll be with the pandemic and COVID and telemedicine. Where will we be? So it's going to be pretty comprehensive. My problem is always making it, paring it down to the point that I'm comfortable with it, not feeling that I've left stuff out. But I think the most important thing is giving references for information so that you can look it up yourself. And if you're a doctor, because I get that a lot, well, I told my doctor what you said and they don't agree. And I'm like, okay, here's what you need. Federal Register, this date, page this, right there in the middle of, you know, that to me is my job. And so getting that kind of information, fixing the mistakes that we can fix and helping our doctors to understand where we're going to be in the future. I don't have a crystal ball, but we do have some indications and implications as we go forward, even to the point of looking at where we are because of the changes in the 2021 office and other outpatient E&M stuff that, you know, so many, we've spent so much time on at conference and will continue to. As the lady said earlier, you know, that's a monthly column now for questions. So I think as we go forward, I hope that this will be a talk that encompasses kind of everything you might want to know. And if you've ever heard one of my lectures, I try to keep it a little upbeat and entertaining. Hopefully, you know, I won't wear a costume, probably not. And I won't have a costume change in the middle, but we'll have to do something to hold the interest because I'm just staring at a screen and most people don't have their screens on. So I appreciate being able to look at you. That helps me. I could see you smile when I say something, but yeah, it's as a presenter, it's a challenge, but I think it's one I'm up for the task of because I've been involved in this intimately for the last year and a half. And I have notebooks and index notebooks of information that I'm using as references. So bring it on. And of course, we got to leave time for questions because we always have questions. And to me, that's the hardest part of a talk is the questions, but that's the part where you learn the most. When you think about that, isn't that really where you learn the most is what are other people asking? And you didn't even know sometimes that you had that question. So leave plenty of time for questions too.
Abundant Kamara says, I'm a women's health coder and we see a lot of telehealth. The most common thing I've seen in the beginning was providers not including the timestamp, but that's getting better.
You know, again, you know, there were pieces of information we didn't know, making sure that time was recorded. And we haven't been helped. I was listening, and I won't say what it is. I was listening to a insurance company's educator yesterday, and she was talking about something, and she said, now you have to record start and stop times. And I put in the chat box, where did you get that information? And, you know, an hour later, she said, now start and stop times is just something I like to see. And I thought, well, don't put it on a slide that has your corporate name on it as an insurance company that says you have to do it, because everybody's going to think you have to do it. So yeah, there's pieces that we get good information and bad information, but yeah, time is the tough one with our docs. I always say, give them a kitchen timer, you know?
Yeah.
obnoxious one.
Well, it's your presentation on May 25th, coding and billing for services during the COVID-19 public health emergency era. And you're just picking out the most important pieces to help direct our coders in the right direction.
Yes. And again, if I've left stuff out, that's where the question and answer comes in, because I probably have an answer and just didn't include that particular topic in. But there's a wealth of information out there. You know, when AAPC used to have their speaker group, we used to give 6-hour talks. So 4 hours is a piece of cake.
All right.
she said confidently, shaking.
That's right. No, you are great. And that's going to be helpful. This presentation will be helpful for so many coders out there. And one of my questions for you was, where does Jill Young go to get all of her information and help her stay at the forefront of all of this? And you answered this, and one of your responses is that you'll share this with those who attend the workshop so they can protect themselves and go back to their providers with sure answers.
Yeah, I think that when we look at gathering information, I think that early on in my career, as a matter of fact, my very first talk at an AAPC national conference, I was looking for a talk that no one else was doing. And I talked on sleep medicine. Wasn't much out there. I had to do a lot of hard research on it. But that's kind of what really started it. When I think about applying to be a speaker for next year's meeting in DC, I'm already thinking, okay, what can I talk about that no one else is talking about? And that then means I've got to do a ton of research on it in order to come off as being knowledgeable and be knowledgeable. And so that ability to do research and to look, and sometimes to look at articles that are on the wrong side of the argument, but at least that tells you what people are seeing and what they're experiencing, it's all part of it. So whether it's a talk on sleep disorders, a talk on the neoplasm table, which, you know, those of you that work at the neoplasm table, we call it the 6 columns of confusion for a reason, but I couldn't find anything. So I interviewed pathologists and realized that here's the problem. They talk about tissue behavior and we're trying to code cell type, 2 different languages. So that's where doing the research comes down to. So as we look at this conference and as we look at other talks that I've done, that's really what motivates me, is I leave some of the more mainstream topics to other people, because they're smart. And I just try to, as I said, be unique and come up with topics and on subjects that people aren't working on. And sometimes that puts you in a very valuable position, like telehealth did, like sleep disorders did back in 2005 when I started giving talks at National. And so if you're looking to take a step in a different direction for your career, talk at your local chapters. There's a group of women, mostly, more and more men. There's a group of people that are very forgiving and see what your knowledge base is, and that'll give you a great start, and apply to Talk It National because it's not as scary as people think. But I think doing the research is the most important thing, because again, it's the questions that'll get you. And that's why I always try to leave room for questions, and I always have follow-up contact information for the questions that come up when you hang up from the conference and you're trying to apply what we're talking about. So, you know, I've been lucky enough over the course of my career to listen to people and to listen what others have said from a negative perspective and turn it into a positive for me. And as I said, do the research is really what it comes down to from my perspective. And that's what I hope to pass on during this conference about this amazing year and a half that we've all just had, and the next 6 months that hopefully we get back to the new normal. You're muted. Caught you.
Yes, you did. Well, I'm not muted now, but I just want our members to know, you know, Jill is here to do that heavy research piece for you. I know a lot of you are busy working, and you want to leave your work at work at the office, but Jill can point you in the right direction in this presentation and get you the information you need to move forward in the right direction. Denise Page says this, Jill, this is very important. Jill, I believe you were the one who enjoyed singing at the piano bar during the 2011 APC conference in Long Beach.
Might have been. I've been known to sing from time to time.
Well, we saw that those who are at HealthCon in Dallas a month or two ago got to see you sing up on the stage.
Yes, I was very, it was a very, I was very blessed to be able to sing and honor two women that have been instrumental in my career, Marty Johnson from the local chapter department and Charlotte Prilliman, who is with, is it Health? I never say it right.
Healthicity?
Healthicity. I know I have a stutter there. Those are two lifelong friends. And that's another thing AAPC does for you. You know, if I've been in the middle of a break and I phone a friend to ask a question that I don't know the answer to, and AAPC is what's done that for me. So keep up your friendships too.
That's right. AAPC is just a great family. Those who have not been to a regional conference or HealthCon or national conference, you're missing another side of AAPC that you probably don't realize exists. It's great to be out there with the family and to feel the camaraderie and unity. It's amazing. It's a lot of fun. Okay, we're going to wrap it up, Jill. But as we do, I just need to point out that May Days is still happening, and we're having presentations several times a week. We have six more May Day events happening. You can register for them one at a time, though. You can check out those events or register for those events at aapc.com/May Days 2021. I'm going to put that link in the comments for those who are interested. I'm doing that right now. And there we go. And Terry says she went to St. Louis way back in the day. Next year is Washington, D.C., as Jill pointed out. And I love Washington, D.C., just so much history there. And that'll be a fun time. All right. Any last words for our AAPC members before we let you go, Jill?
You know what? The offerings like this, and you know, we don't get CEUs for this. We don't have, you know, outlines and content. I just think that the AAPC putting on events like this and events like some of the May Mania stuff that's going on is just a great way to get out and do stuff that you're not used to doing, but also to listen. That's one of the things that I've learned is I always listen, whether I'm going to work in that arena or not, because maybe I won't get anything from the speaker, but the lady standing beside me, turns out she's from Rhode Island, and we end up trading cards. And the next thing you know, we're best friends, and I'm working on a project and I call her. And I cannot tell you how many people I know that is exactly what's happened. And there was a young lady at conference this year. I was going to dinner and she was standing in line behind me alone. And I said, do you want to sit with me? We were joined at the hip for the rest of conference. And that's a friendship that we just clicked strangely. And those are the kinds of things that just, you can see the smile on my face thinking about her. And those are the kinds of things AAPC can do for you. So, you know, don't be afraid to branch out a little bit. Don't be afraid to come to this seminar in particular. If you have any knowledge needs, or even just want to be validated that you're doing things right, these conferences that the AAPC are holding, the ones of this length, you know, you're going to get a lot of material. You get the workbook, you get a slide, you get all kinds of stuff to use as references after the fact. And I think that's something you don't get from some of the other places. So thank you so much, Alex, for your time. Thank you for including me in this. I think initially I said, oh, just give me 10 minutes to talk. And here we are at 58 minutes after the hour, and I'm still talking. So I'm going to stop and say thank you all. And I hope to see you in a couple of weeks.
All right. So again, Jill will be presenting coding and billing for services during the COVID-19 public health emergency era. That will be live on May 25th. It'll be available on demand on May 26th. I will put that link to the workshop registration in the comments. I'm doing that right now. And that is it. Jill, hold on just for a minute. APC members, thank you so much for joining us today. We will see you next time. And thanks for your comments, and you have a great day.